Teď pozvu do diskuze třetího našeho hosta, Tomáš Pojer, prorektor Cevro institutu, který naši pozornost zaměří na Střední východ, ovšem v dnešním světě nějak vzdálené místo, které ovlivňuje naši národní bezpečnost.
Okay, with your permission, I will speak in English that we can then discuss it or that you know what I'm talking about. I will not focus exclusively on Middle East because I will frame it into the Euro-Atlantic cooperation in defense of Europe, where I do see the trends and the dangers, and then linking it also to the Middle East as our major problem and not the major problem of United States of America, which is going to be rather perhaps in the future dividing us than uniting us. One initial remark, Karel was speaking about the soccer game and soccer field. I'm also not a soccer fan, but yes, I admit that we did do some first initial good kick off. The problem is that we are playing on our half of the field. There is no doubt about it. I mean, can I argue if we are playing right around our goal or if it's more to the middle, but we are playing in our half of the field, and this is one of the major problems of our mindset. And as was already discussed, whenever you talk about defense, you must also talk about offense. It's in the soccer game as well as in the military game or the military reality, and we have got used not to talk about the offense. We are rather used to talk only about defense and be silent at least about the offensive skills, be it in the cyber or whatever other domain. And this goes to the main, to the first main problem which we have, is the problem of the mindset and problem of the, let's say, political mindset, of course, coming from the society. So the problem of the politics and dividing line in the Euro-Atlantic arena is, I think, very well can be demonstrated, and the trends we do see on the three large players, and I will not mention UK, God save us from Jeremy Corbyn being in the Downing Street, as every one of us, including the Brits, but let's see. But look what is happening in Germany, France and US, and where the trends are. In Germany, the level of anti-Americanism in the society and among the political elites is the highest ever. And the trend is rather to be continuing, unfortunately, as I do see it. France has been traditionally US skeptic, but the anti-Americanism there, I don't see that such a big problem, so such a great change. But yes, what Macron now said about the main enemies, adversaries, threats, competitors, naming Russia, China and US. He then regretted it, saying it, but I think it was not a slip of the tongue. It was coming from the reality and showing much more the reality in Europe. As the reality in Europe, which is based on confusion of who our real challengers are and where the real threats do lie. Then, of course, we have the second problem is, and what has been also discussed here, is the capabilities of the militaries, meaning the military spending, also the military mobility, just to say where, as Czechs we are, in terms of approval of foreign soldiers being transferred through the Czech Republic, we are behind Slovakia, Hungary, Poland. Of course, we are naturally behind Germany, which is still inherited the occupation force of after the Second World War. But we are the worst from our neighborhood. We are the slowest from our neighborhood, yes, with an exception of neutral Austria. So we can say the Austrians are even worse. But it's a different category, and the Slovaks and the Hungarians and the Poles are better than us. So it can be improved, basically easily, by the parliament, but let's see if it's going to be. But if I go back to the investment, then, yes, if we look into the glass half full, then we do see that the down part was in 2014, and from 2014, in majority, we are rising nominally, partly regarding the GDP. So, yes, we are on the improvement trajectory. Looking into the threats and into the challenges lying ahead and the 2024, we can bet that we are not going to reach 2% as goal, and we can hopefully be sustaining the 20% which we now are investing, not as Czechs, we are half of it, but as NATO Europe, we do have the 20% threshold which we have reached, so hopefully we will stay there. But looking from the into the next 10 years, we will not invest enough, as most of the countries in Europe will not invest enough. We will not improve our capabilities enough, and the gap between us and US will be growing. Or it's not going to be like marginalized, and it's not going to be converging. If it's going to be converging, then it's going to be very, very slowly converging. So this problem will be there. Because, again, our ambitions are not there. Our will is not there. Our political will is not there. And ours, I don't mean only Czech, but so overall continental Europe. I don't see that much of a change in this aspect, and we are bet in investment, and it's not only investment into the military capabilities. We are bet in investment into anything. We are bet in investment into the roads and highways. We are bet in the investment into our cyber, and we are bet in the investment into our defense capabilities. And if it was only us Czechs, fine, we could survive, but it's a majority trend in Europe, across Europe, with some notable exceptions, and thankfully we do have them. And number three, what is a problem is it's the looming trade war between the one and the other bank of the Atlantic, which would be, if that goes on, then it would be devastating, not only economically, but specifically politically. And I'm more worried about the political effects of the trade war. When I mentioned Germany and France, then I should also mention Europe, mention US, because it's not Donald Trump, it was Barack Obama, it was not George W. Bush because he was distracted by 9/11, but this pivot to Asia is a fact, is a long-term fact. And as we go to see the threats, then the threat of China or competition from China has been number one in US for the long time, and it will stay there, and it will be the main focus of US for new American president, be it in 2 years or in 6 years, be it a Democrat or a Republican. If there is no game changer, then this focus of US and this pivot to Asia, to China, will continue. Again, drifting more as Euro-Atlantic world apart. So what do we have and how to realize and what unites? Of course, the threats do unite. Threats are threats, but there are also opportunities. Every threat is an opportunity. Every threat is an opportunity for the maneuver, and we should really look at the threats from this perspective, which we don't do, unfortunately. But as I mentioned in the past, that in the morning with the question, the war in Eastern Ukraine is a great opportunity. Yes, it is. And should we wish that the war in Eastern Ukraine ends? No, we should not. Because if there is some wake-up call, if there is something which unites us into some discussions, and if there was a wake-up call of 2014 that we have started slowly, as I mentioned, to invest and to think about capabilities, it was because of Ukraine, or Russia, Ukraine, Crimea, and it was because of the turmoil in the Middle East. Without that, we would be falling asleep, and we would be sleeping silently, at the same time when not only US, but also Russia and China and the Islamists do not sleep, and they do know what they want, and they are investing into their capabilities heavily, all of them. So one thing we should really wish for is not to fall asleep and to keep threats as far from our territory as possible. And when I mentioning threats, again, those are the threats which have been mentioned here many times already this day. So it's Russia, it's the political Islam terrorism, and it's China. And from every capital, from every political leadership, you can see it differently phrased from US, as it was mentioned, it would be more China terrorism and then Russia. From here, it would be more terrorism, Russia, and then perhaps like China. From Germany, we discussed in the morning, it may be terrorism, then it's hard to say if it would be Russia or China, depending probably in which part of Germany you ask, but we are in this triangle, and this triangle will stay there. This triangle will stay there, and this triangle is also an opportunity, the opportunity which we should not miss, and we should really focus at. And regarding the Middle East from this triangle, there, regarding China, we will not be alone as Europe, because there the US is, and there some other players like are going to be around. Regarding Russia, we will see how we will make it happen, if we are alone or not, how much the US will stay committed in for the security of Europe. And if we are not committed for the security of Europe ourselves, the US will not stay. If we are committed for the security of Europe ourselves meaning as Czechs and as Slovaks, as Germans, as French, then there is more likelihood that the US will stay. The third threat, the political Islam and Islamist terrorism, there we may be left very much alone. It's of course our direct neighborhood. There US will try as much as possible to get out of the arena. And our hope is that it will stay focused on at least some parts of the Middle East and some points, that we will not be left alone on ourselves. Because, yes, we can do something. Yes, we can do something, and we had a performance, as also with the Czech soldiers in Mali under the French leadership, etc. But it would be very, very hard to see that we can positively handle the situation if it's only on the European shoulders or on the shoulders of the European nations. So from that point of view, it's hard to argue if our main challenge is Russia or if our main challenge is the situation in the Middle East. Of course, it depends if you ask in Tallinn or Warsaw or in Madrid or Rome. Yes, it depends also on the on the nature of the challenge in 5 or 10 years, which we do not know exactly how it will be. So the juggling of what is more serious threat and what is less, let's take the threat seriously and let's not waste that much time if it's number one or number two. So let's be prepared for both. And let's understand that especially the Middle East, especially the Mediterranean Middle East, is going to be much more on our shoulders. And the Middle East Mediterranean threat, it is about terrorism, it is about the idea of Islamism, but it's not from the point of view of terrorism and how many casualties you will have from terrorism on the European soil. It is the political effects of the terrorism on the European soil. And as terrorism, by definition, is a political act, of course, the terrorist attacks in Europe do have political connotations. And so it's not about the casualties and basically minimal casualties, because terrorism is usually limited in casualties. But it is about political effects of the terrorist attacks. And political effects of the terrorist attacks into every society, into every political, every vote, every popular vote, every elections, etc., is reinforced by migration and all those issues. And then you can see that every major vote in the last decade in Europe has been affected by the issue of terrorism, migration, maybe not number one, but among the first five, definitely, and in most countries among the first three, no matter if the countries and the societies have been hit by terrorism and migration or not. And at the end, it's not that relevant. The relevant is how much it is an issue, and it's been an issue everywhere. And in some cases, or in many cases, the issue has been exploited also by outsiders and by the other threats. And it was many times already mentioned how the Russians have used the terrorism and for the spread and the propaganda from their point of view, migration as well. And we can see that also in every society and every country, that then with the hacking attack on the French TV channel was mentioned under the banner of Islamic flag, which was at the end Russian flag behind that, not the Islamic State. So you can see those threats then somehow moving around and using the other front as well. So what we should do, first of all, we should not fall asleep, and we should be thankful that we are sometimes awakened, and that we are awakened behind or far from our borders and not in our capitals and in our towns. Sometimes we are awakened even in our capitals, which is not so optimistic as option. We should really invest into our capabilities for our own sake, not to please Donald Trump, but for our own sake, and then also so we can use it for pleasing Donald Trump or whoever is going to be in the White House or whoever is going to fear our commitment and capabilities from our adversaries. As we should wish for the window of opportunity, which I think is there slightly open for rechanging the permanent stationing of troops within NATO on the eastern flank in the next few years. I think it's possible. Something has been done, and it should be really strengthened, not only because of Russia, but also because of Germany. I will stop here, but I can elaborate more with the questions. So because of not only Germany, but internal balance in Europe, the rebalancing through the military assets. We should really take all those three competitors, challengers, enemies, potential enemies and crises, not only as a paralyzing threat, but as a real opportunity, because it is an opportunity, and that we have in some cases already used it into our advantage in the last couple of years. Thank you.
Tak já děkuji, opravdu tři zajímavé příspěvky. Já teda bych dovolil oslovit naše překladatele. V případě, kdybyste měli otázky, můžeme to formulovat na naše hosty takto. A já bych se dovolil teda tu jednu otázku teda od podlahy na základě toho, co zde bylo řečeno. Myslím si, že ty priority, zejména Spojených států, ve vztahu k Číně, ve vztahu k Evropě jsou jasné. A když bylo řečeno, že dnes se snížila ta možnost vést konflikt na jeden ze strany ozbrojených sil Spojených států, jakým způsobem teda by to byla věc, která byla směřovaná, dejme tomu, vůči Číně, a co teda vlastně bude dělat NATO? Protože NATO vlastně by je postaveno tak, aby zajišťovalo bezpečnost euroatlantického prostoru, nikoli však tichomorského. To vlastně s ohledem na ty omezené kapacity současné.
Professor, if I understand the question correctly, is what can NATO do to help deal with the threat of China? First, my number one interest is defending all of our allies, that the alliance continues its commitment to each other, so that we do what's necessary here within the alliance, this cohesion that we talked about, this a sense of urgency to improve capabilities. I think the alliance has shown it has the ability to adapt quickly to changing security environments. We've taken, I think, many of the right steps that need to be done as an alliance to improve capabilities. The nations, of course, have to take on full responsibility for themselves also. The modernization effort that we talked about, it's not just about 2%. It's about capability. It's about being able to deliver forces. It's about infrastructure, it's about cyber protection, and it's also about resilient societies that are able to resist misinformation efforts like what Andrew discussed. I think an important part of this is transparency, media that is truly free and that investigates and looks at things, such as Chinese investment. Where is all this money going for projects? And what influence is China getting as a result of that influence? I think this is an important part of deterrence, not just of Russia, but of China as well. Now, if there is a military conflict of some sort in the Pacific with China, and I want to emphasize, I'm not saying it's inevitable, but the possibility is very real. I would imagine it's most likely going to be ships, a maritime, as well as land-based missiles, anti-ship missiles. I think our allies in the Pacific, such as Japan, Taiwan, maybe even South Korea, could be threatened. There's a reason that Secretary Mattis has been to Vietnam twice this year, building up relationships with friends and allies in the Pacific region. I would not envision a large land domain or a large conflict in the land domain, mostly air, maritime, space, and in cyber domain. So the role of the Czech Republic, of course, would be ensuring that the European pillar is strong to continue to deter Russia if the U.S. has to is in a conflict in the Pacific. But specific to China, I think the role of the, if I may say this, the role of the parliament as well as the role of the media is ensuring transparency about Chinese investment.
Ben, let's see if I'm right or what would be your comment on that. In the past, U.S. was ready to fight 2.5 wars, two big wars, one smaller conflict. Now the capacity is 1.5. Since the threat reception is China, 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 and then the rest, then one out of 1.5 will be focusing on Asia, on China, on Pacific. So then, mathematically, and reality will be more colorful always. And there can be some game changers, like 9/11 in the past was a game changer, and no one has seen that. But we have half of war for European arena. European arena meaning the European neighborhood being the East and also the Middle East. Half of the war from U.S. capabilities is more than what we have altogether. Okay, so it's not a limited force, but it's still half of the war. And if I look into our neighborhood and into the European neighborhood, being the neighborhood of NATO, being neighborhood of EU, however you define it, then of course out of those forces, something will be still kept for Russia as a challenge. And if something will be for the Middle East, yes, it will be related to Israel. Yes, it will be related to Iran. It will be related to specific places, but it will not be related to Mediterranean and North Africa. Mediterranean maybe with the exception of Israel. It will be related to forces for more serious conflicts than what we see in the... So Europe is already and will be left for defending itself from the North African threats and taking care of North Africa. I cannot see what would have to happen that U.S. is more involved there in 10 years than now. Mm-hmm. So this I see as a pullout from U.S., also looking into the capacities, and how the burden sharing then in reality is and will be. Do you agree?
Actually, that was a masterclass on U.S. strategic capabilities. That was very well done. The 2.5, now 1.5, and I appreciate Thomas keeping it simple for an infantry soldier on math like that. But the kind of capabilities that we would really need in a conflict with China are very limited, and they're also the same ones we need in a conflict with Russia. And this is where I think our European allies can step in. First of all, our Navy And I realize there's not a huge naval tradition in the Czech Republic, but the U.S. Navy is already way too small. It's too small to do what it has to do. So surely, whatever naval component U.S. Navy presence that's in Europe and the Atlantic now, most of that will have to shift. And it won't be like World War II with the Battle of Leyte Gulf or Battle of Midway, because it'll be in the Arctic, in the North Atlantic, because China is interested in that, as well as in the South China Sea, around Taiwan and so on. Missile defense, where I think Czech Republic does have a role to play. We have one battalion of Patriot. That's one battalion. And it will take the entire battalion just to protect Ramstein, the U.S. air base in Germany, which, by the way, is an essential air base for everything we do in Africa and the Middle East, as well as in Europe. And it'll take everything just to protect that. So there's nothing left for protecting other European ports, or even more importantly, European citizens. I think that Germany should take the lead, should be the framework nation, and to raise the missile defense capability of the alliance, as well as with some partner nations. And I think the Czech Republic could play a role here. What I don't understand, I mean, I have a belief, but I could be wrong, why Russia continues to insist on the West as its threat, when in fact, I think you all would agree that the safest part of Russia's border is the part that touches NATO. I mean, we have 80 tanks, 80, U.S. Army in Europe. In fact, 6 years ago, the last tank went home. There were no tanks there, zero. Our aviation brigade was wiped out, sent home.
We have 35.
So for a while, you had way more than we did. So my point is, Germany was trying to get out of the tank business. Netherlands was out of the tank business. The U.S. Navy in Europe had one ship. That was it. That was all we had. And so this notion that somehow the West is encroaching on Russia, we're threatening Russia, they have to respond, of course, is a completely false narrative, which I imagine is done to generate or to justify to the poor Russian people why this particular regime does what it does. I think that we were wrong, the U.S. and probably others, about what we thought Russia was going to be. We all thought that Russia was going to be our partner. We wanted that. I can remember Russian soldiers with us in Bosnia in 1995 when the IFOR, Implementation Force, went in to implement the Dayton Peace Accord. We had Russian soldiers. I remember seeing them in the dining facility, the mess hall, eating with American soldiers and British and others as part of this NATO operation. So you could see why everybody was actually very hopeful. But I think certainly I was naive, and I think the United States was naive. We thought that Russia was either going to become like a big Poland. President Obama referred to them as a regional power. That's where we thought it was going, because it was such an unhealthy population, the demographics were all going in the wrong direction, that it would literally wither away. Instead, they have shown a lot more resilience, and their economy, even though their economy is small, they've still undertaken a major modernization effort. To maintain nuclear weapons is very, very expensive. And they've modernized in many other areas where they now have an advantage over us, to include air defense, missile defense, long-range rockets, and long-range artillery. And they can move faster than we can move. So these are things that give them, in a specific place, an advantage over us. And, of course, the fact that they've raised the pension age to 65, when the average age or the life expectancy for a man is 66, that would represent a serious economic strategic decision for their economy. which is not very popular there, which is why the National Guard in Russia is almost as large as the armed forces, is to make sure that there's not a color revolution inside the Russian Federation. Now, the bigger threat is China. So coming back to your question, Professor, border between Russia and China, I think, is about 4,000 kilometers. I mean, it's a massive border, and truthfully, it's wide open. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of Chinese coming and going back and forth over that border, extracting resources of all types. And I think what Russia really fears is becoming a big giant Tankstelle or gas station for China, to become a vassal almost of China. I think that's what they really fear. But they put all their focus on the West as if we are the threat. And I think if we could, I mean, what an amazing, and it could be completely unrealistic, but what an amazing change if somehow Russia saw the wisdom of cooperating with the West in a way that would resist or be a counterbalance to what China is doing. But I don't see any possibility of that given the current leadership in the Russian Federation.
Just a quick couple of points. I mean, I agree with Ben absolutely that, you know, those debates or those fears within the Kremlin that Russia might become in a sense a vassal state of China go right back to 1991. And, you know, those discussions were there even during the 1990s, but there hasn't yet seemingly been a realization that ultimately China is the greater threat. Although perhaps we've seen a slight change in the Kremlin position over the last couple of years, despite the Kremlin's own pivot to Asia since 2014. But I want to go back to your initial question, if I may, and you know, this notion of how does NATO deal with China. There clearly is, I think, a role for NATO to play, and Ben touched on that, but I think there's actually a greater role for NATO members to play, you know, at a bilateral level rather than for the organisation. And for that to happen, I agree with Thomas that, you know, if we think about the three threats facing not only NATO members, but members within the Western alliance of being Russia, China, and Islamist spy terrorism, then there really does need to be a step change in how we, as individual nation states, think about those issues. Russia, you could argue, since 2014, there is now an accepted argument that Russia poses a threat not only to individual member states, but also to allies. That's sort of the case, I would argue, in Western Europe and North America. But we're certainly not there on China. We're certainly not there on China, it seems to me, perhaps in North America, but not in the UK. You know, it's only relatively recently that the government announced a review of China's investment in UK critical national infrastructure, because the Chinese state wanted to build a nuclear power plant in the UK. Huawei are providing the resources and the infrastructure for the 5G network in the UK. In Central and Eastern Europe, we have the 16+1 initiative. China is still very much seen through economic terms rather than being a security threat. That's not unique, of course, because that's the way that most of us saw Russia since 1991. So, as I say, I think there's more for individual nation states to do than for the alliance to do as a whole.
You started to talk about Germany, a special role of Germany inside of Europe, or as the core state, the NATO. Could you, tell us more about this very specific, maybe internal, but also our problem?
First of all, Germany is pacifist by nature these days, which is not bad. So it's better than the other alternative, or than the opposite alternative. But it also goes in the direction that it, if it doesn't want the NATO, meaning mostly US, but not only US, the military infrastructure really spreading equally across the alliance. It's opposing it. It's bitterly opposing it. It's been always doing that. It's been the main opponent from within NATO on the missile defense discussions about radar here in Czech Republic. It was in Berlin. And when they didn't say it openly, they called to Vienna to say that. But it was Germany. It's inherently inside Germany, because of the special traditional special relations with Russia, so not to have here any military infrastructure, permanent stationing, etc. So this is one thing which I don't know where Germany will be, in what state in 10 or 20 years, but this will be counterbalancing act of on Germany, especially once there would be potentially less presence of U.S. Army in Germany in the future, based because of the American domestic pullout for whatever reasons, or because of the German push of the U.S. Army from Germany. So I want to have also an alternative of the U.S. Army not only in Bavaria, but also have it somewhere else, to have the U.S. Army in Europe and to have more presence here, also counterbalancing Germany in that nature. We have a problem with Germany because Germany is the country which officially says that it will not meet the 2% criteria. And it has political effects to the others not meeting the 2%. If the strongest and largest and the mightiest economies doesn't do it, with budgetary surplus, by the way, and Germany with no debt almost at all compared to the others, then how the others are going to be spending. So it's pushing the 2% commitment down because of its own example. Also, on the other hand, yes, what we should not wish as Czechs and as others, that Germany is the only country which meets the 2% criteria, because it would be very dominant militarily, as it is dominant economically. It would be also militarily dominant in NATO, Europe, or in EU, however you do it. So we should invest more and first into our capabilities, we meaning we in Central Europe, but also the Dutch and Danes and the others, and then pushing Germany into its commitment. It should not be Germany deciding, doing, and investing in that. So there is this, and it goes into, both angles go into the discussion, into the debate. Do we have Germany's Europe or European Germany, and how Germany is being tied by the others that it doesn't become, again, this colossus out of hands, economically as well as militarily and, of course, politically. So this is the dilemmas with Germany, and I don't see Germany as a threat. I don't know what will be in decades to come, but it should be. We should always think about counterbalancing it, especially us Czechs and Poles and some others who are traditionally living between Germany and Russia in this space. And we will not escape from this space. And it's nice to live here, but we are in between of Germany and Russia. China is too far.
So I agree largely with everything that you said. I mean, I would just say as well that if one accepts the argument that NATO has provided and continues to provide, not past tense, future tense and current tense, continues to provide Europe's hard power security, traditional security since 1991, then the European Union has, in a sense, provided Europe's economic security since 1991. And if one thinks about not only NATO's position vis-a-vis Russia at the moment, but the European Union's position vis-a-vis Russia at the moment, then the European Union's position, together with that of the US, has been to an attempt to isolate Russia from the international financial system. That is the basis of the sanctions regime that's been in place since 2014. And of all the member states of the EU, the one country that's in a sense undermining that is Germany with Nord Stream 2. So I think when we think about the specificity of Germany, and I think you're right in the analysis that you provided, we also need to think about the non-military specificity of Germany.
Sir, if I may just add, I'm based in Frankfurt. I spend a lot of time in Germany. I think that when people talk about, this would be the only time I ever disagree with Thomas, I think that Germany achieving 2% investment does not necessarily mean that they become a colossus anymore. I do hear this from German politicians every now and then. You remember the former Außenminister, or Foreign Minister Gabriel said, if we spent 2%, what would we do with all the aircraft carriers? Okay, I know he was being sarcastic. I have some suggestions where he could put those aircraft carriers, but they could spend a lot more without growing the size of their military, without increasing force structure. You know, they have three divisions now, but they're not full. So finish the development of what already exists, complete their modernization efforts. Surprisingly, I was astounded to learn this, that the, you know, the, you think of the Bundeswehr, but high quality people, high quality equipment, when it comes to their communications, they actually are way behind. They have not invested in modernized communications equipment, digital. They're doing that now, but I mean, there's a lot that they can do, a lot of money they can invest just to fix what they have. The Navy, of course, is in terrible shape, but they are a nation that should be dominant in the Baltic Sea, for example, helping lead both allies and partners like Sweden and Finland in the Baltic Sea, as well as helping with investment. I think another area that they could invest in, what we would call commodities, ammunition, fuel, things that are consumed but are very expensive. They could, Germany could be the supplier, if you will, of ammunition for all of us. I've already mentioned missile defense. I mean, there's nothing controversial about protecting European citizens. And I think this is a place where Germany could invest very quickly on that. And then finally, infrastructure. For the for Western Europe, it all starts with German seaports like Bremerhaven, German rail, Deutsche Bahn, bridges. Germany has an excellent military bridge. It's the best in the world, the M3 bridge, but they only have one. And just the number of rivers to cross, when you cross the Oder River to go all the way to Tallinn, there's about 173 rivers that are at least 10 meters across. And there are thousands of other bodies of water. So, again, nothing controversial about spending money on bridges. What I'm asking you to do in here is help pressure our German allies, who we need to be leaders inside the European Union and inside, especially with the UK departing the European Union, but also inside the alliance, and to reduce concerns that some people have that Germany spending 2% becomes a threat to anybody. There are so many places that they could put money quickly that do not represent an increase in the size of the military. I would defer to General Pavel, who probably has much more specific recommendations or thoughts on that.
Ben, I was thinking the same way. It means Germany can spend reasonably on dual-use infrastructure. They can use the resources to build the frameworks for other nations to hook in. And the vehicle, how to provide other nations how to spend more in a very reasonable way. Because alone, we can hardly afford larger formations. Germany can spend money on providing the framework, and other nations would provide their battalion or any other enabler. Then Germany hosts their enabling command. And to make this enabling command operational would consume a lot of resources. So I think there are very meaningful ways for Germany how to spend 2%. And in fact, unlocking opportunities for other nations to reasonably spend their 2% as well.
I fully agree. When I spoke about Germany as Colossus, I didn't mean it from the global point of view, because they are so underinvested that from the global point of view, with 2%, they would be still dwarfs. Maybe a little bit larger dwarfs, but dwarfs. I meant it more from the European perspective, that if they do 2%, and we as the rest are somewhere in between 1 and 1.5 on average, then the gap between Germany and the rest of Europe would be unhealthy. I didn't mean it from the global perspective, where they can be investing 4% for 10 years and they would still say it would still not match the military mights of those we have talked about in the previous part.